Welcome into Morning Drive, live from Kitchen Notes here on a Football Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel on a busy, busy show today. Nikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Hollywood-Munson back in the Game Nashville studios, powered by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Julia and RumbleOn.com. And we will ramble on for the next 4 hours about what could have been one of the most ugliest, brutal, difficult watches for Tennessee Titans football that I can recall in at least the existence of this show.
Since the Baltimore Ravens game of last year.
Jesus.
I'll say this, guys. I'm going to say this. I think they are really a complete team. They are a real complete team. In week one, complete team effort in a good way. Week two, complete team effort in a not-so-good way. Last night, in my opinion, a complete team effort. Everybody on the same page of sucking. All on the same page. A complete team effort of being bad, including the coaching staff.
It seemed as if that team didn't come out to play. And that's basically what it was. It didn't seem as if they knew the ramifications of this Thursday night game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Or they just took for granted that Gardner Minshew was the backup quarterback and they would do as they have done with the quarterbacks with Jacksonville and make them look bad. It didn't happen. Gardner Minshew wasn't the reason why Jacksonville was losing prior to playing Tennessee, but he was the reason why Jacksonville won that game last night. Say what you want to say. The kid was dropping dimes. He even had passes dropped that was in receivers' hands.
Yeah.
First downs that were dropped. Touchdowns that were dropped. This kid, he was
he's got
the second
swag,
coming
man.
Of Joe Montana last night. No, I'm just playing people. But no, the young man did exactly what he was supposed to do. And I heard all yesterday, oh, they're not going to lose to Gardner Minshew. He's trash. Jacksonville is trash. Jalen Ramsey is destroying the team. Let me tell you something about that.
Thanks for throwing me under the bus. Yeah.
Let me tell you something about that whole little issue. For those that have not been in locker rooms, this is no indictment on anyone else, and I'm not trying to, you know, down anyone else.
I try to avoid them.
But let me tell you something about locker rooms. There are 52 guys in the locker room, probably 53, including practice squad. There's more than that. All 50-something of those guys got problems when they walk through that door. All 50-something of them got problems, people, when they walk through that door. But you know what they do? They have this thing, what is called this imaginary suitcase before you walk in the door. So as we come through the gate, we get out of our car, we have that imaginary suitcase, we take all of our baggage, all of that stuff that we deal with, kids, wife, girlfriend, you know, financials, all that stuff, we take it all and we put it in a suitcase and we leave it right at the door. And you know what? We walk through that door, we're a new man. We don't worry about stuff like that. So you know what? When Jalen Ramsey got to that door, you know what he did? He took all that stuff, all that Jalen Ramsey stuff, all the stuff that people are saying he's selfish and this and that. He took all that stuff. He had a big suitcase now. He took all that stuff and he put it in that big old suitcase and left it at the front of the stadium. And you know what he did when he walked in? He balled out.
It's definitely not a carry-on. He definitely has to check that.
The
that
kid back. Is the best corner in the National Football
League. Yeah, he's really good, although there were a couple of plays. I mean, Tajay Sharp made a nice big play against him. And Jalen Ramsey played a really good game. But, again, the offensive line, we got a long list of stuff to get to here for the Titans, obviously.
Is that an offensive line?
But the offensive line is just – it's absolutely atrocious. They couldn't run this time. They ran the football at least in the first two games. This time they couldn't run the football.
No, they could. They got holding calls.
And then they cheated every time they did run the ball well. It was called on cheating. Now, one of them was on – I want to say it was Tajay on a block downfield that was called. One of the holding wasn't on the offensive line. It was on
Smith had a phantom holding
call. But it's like the receiver – the holding call on the receiver on the block downfield was just atrocious. The refs were terrible. I think even Tom Brady's tweeting about it last night, how he's not going to watch because the refs are so bad. I didn't realize the number that holding calls are up 70%, basically. It's a rough estimate. I think it was closer to 65%.
It's unwatchable.
It's 65 to 70% increase in holding calls through 3 weeks of football.
Stop
like that, that's not that. I mean, if you're going to emphasize it, that's fine. But, like, you got to –
You can't slow every football game down to a screeching halt because you're just going to call holding more now.
But they called it both ways.
Because
now.
You can call holding on every. There are some bad calls on the for the Jags for sure, but like you can't. Mm-hmm. Like if what's the point of that being an emphasis? Because you can call it on every play, as both Troy and Joe pointed out last night. We'll get to the quarterback, but the offensive line is to me and Vrabel again with a mind-boggling poor decision that makes no sense. The defense. I mean, you speak highly of Gardner Minshew, and I like him as a player. But the defense, by and large, at the six-minute mark of the first quarter, when they were down 14-0, the defense largely was unstoppable after that for the Titans. It was punt, 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 three. They had 5 3 and outs other than one bad pass interference call. I mean, it was they were allowing nothing. They allowed one drive after going down 14-0. They allowed one drive. It led to a field goal. The only other play that the Jags had was the long run by Fournette, and that was basically to end the game. So the defense did everything it possibly could except for actually sack the quarterback. But the offensive line, Lawan helps the left tackle position. You're going to need to play Dennis Kelly at another spot. Like, why is Corey Levine not on the roster? Why did you cut Corey Levine at the beginning of the year? That was mind-boggling to me because Ben Jones was a complete liability last night. So now you've got Ben Jones and the right guard position that are complete liabilities. You need Lawan to shore up the left side. You need to fix two positions at least to have a chance moving forward because if Kelly can play guard, great. If Conklin can slide in, great. But you need to fix not only the left tackle position but also the right guard position and maybe the center position as well. And you cut a person that everyone thought at the beginning of the year might have been good enough to play center for you because you needed David Quisenberry. And so I don't – again, that's a Vrabel-John Robinson decision. Going for the field goal on 4th and 6, a 29-yard field goal, not going for it is just completely baffling to me. So, again, complete team effort, boys. Nice job. Teamwork.
And to your point, Marcus Mariota pressured a career-high 18 times, according to ESPN Stats and Information, sacked a total of 9 times. And what I don't get is how this team could come out so motivated, so ticked off for greatness, that Cleveland game, and do what they did. Now, granted, Cleveland gave them a ton of gifts with penalties and turnovers, but they stomped a mud hole in the Cleveland Browns in week one, and it's almost as if they already crowned themselves as going from good to great. And the last 2 weeks against divisional opponents, you have no piss and vinegar in your step at all.
I know where you're going to go with Delaney.
What did I tell you? Yeah. And y'all, people, listen to me. I know what I'm talking about when I say certain things. That whole we thought they were, that stuff, it comes to bite you, man. Just leave it alone. Because you know what?
Yep.
The Indianapolis Colts and the Jacksonville Jaguars could say the same thing about y'all. They are who we thought they were. You know?
Yeah.
It's when you go out and you prove that, listen, we are the better team, you let it go. You just let it go. You build win on top of win on top of win. I guarantee you, Vrabel hates that stuff. But he just won't come out and say it. That stuff Vrabel hates because it's like y'all get one little nugget and then all of a sudden this arrogance come out. Like y'all just been winning 12 games a year. It's, like y'all the New England Patriots. Like y'all been going to the Super Bowl every other year. That arrogance come out in this team and it's like, for why is it coming out again?
The NFL's a humbling game.
Exactly. Like why is this arrogance coming out again? Delaney Walker, fantastic player. I would have him on my team every day, twice on Sunday. But stuff like that, Taylor Lewan a few years ago, this right here, listen, when you win a game, even if the team was who you thought they were, you keep it moving. Hey, that was a good team. They're going to get better. We did what we were supposed to do. We're on to the Indianapolis Colts. I know we hate it when Belichick says it. We're on the Baltimore Ravens. We're on the Miami Dolphins. Well, we're on the Indianapolis Colts. We're on to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're on to Atlanta.
Even Antonio Brown answered a question that way this week.
That's what you need to say, man.
If you can get Antonio Brown to say, hey, I'm just here to play ball. Like, you know what I mean? If you can get that guy to fall in line, you know what I mean? Like, and I also think, and I wonder, Derek, you can maybe speak to this. The how they came out to start, right, Nick, is what you're talking about, just sort of that energy. Both games the last 2 weeks, and I don't want to lay it all on Adoree Jackson because it's not. It's a complete team effort. But Adoree Jackson has made one unbelievably massive mistake early in the first quarter in both of the first two in the last two games, giving the other team the ball inside the 10-yard line. You cannot give teams the football first and goal and expect to stop them routinely. And Adoree Jackson with a penalty slash face guarding slash pass interference because he allowed the guy to get behind him last week against the Colts, and then obviously fumbling the punt when your defense goes out and gets a great stop. You fumble the punt and you make the first mistake of dropping it. The second mistake is not falling on it. He tries to do something with it, and then, of course, they get the ball on the 7-yard line. And you can't give offenses the football in the NFL on the 7-yard line. Like, you just can't do that. And so huge mistakes from Adoree Jackson set both games in motion. It's not all his fault, but, like, you can't have just a glaring, absolute blunder right out of the gate and expect your team to have the same momentum and energy. It's just a killer, Derek. I mean, Derek, tell me what that feels like in the locker room or on the sideline when you're amped up for a game, you're ready to go, you feel good about your game prep, your week of practice, whatever, and all of a sudden, boom, you're out of the gate, and you make a dumb mistake, and you're down 7-0.
Well, you feel like, oh, here we go again.
Right.
It's raining. It's a Thursday night. My body hurt. And then you make a mistake like this for a lack of concentration. You got to know when the ball's wet, you can't do stuff like that. You can't try to recover a ball or let the ball hit the ground, then try to pick it up when the conditions are that way.
Yeah. And the USA Today sports section yesterday did a feature on Adoree Jackson about he wants to go beyond being a football player and begin making his mark in the entertainment industry and focus on his brand. Good. Go. I'm sick of tired of watching this guy. I know you're mad at him too, but you know what? Unacceptable mistakes from that guy. Two straight weeks.
I've told you guys, man. Whatever he had at SC is completely gone, and you can't get it back no matter what. I don't know what the kid's confidence is gone. It was gone before the punt return. After that punt return, that muff punt, it's completely gone. I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see Humphreys back there on a routine basis.
Most of the second half he was back
there. Because he's a guy that's going to catch the football. He might not be as electrifying as Adoree Jackson, but Adoree Jackson ain't showed us nothing since his rookie year. So I would rather have somebody that's capable of catching a punt and making smart decisions. And this is not the only dumb decision he's made on punt return in his very short career.
Yeah, and you talked about it last night in your postgame. By the way, you looked very dapper.
Well, thank you.
On television. Beast. I stayed up late just to watch you.
Thank you.
It was
you.
Just raw heat emanating from my television. so, but I thought you did a great job, Derek Morgan, on the broadcast. but even then you pointed out, you say it wasn't just the one. I mean, the one was the big one. It was the critical,
exactly,
crucial error that totally swung the momentum of the game right out of the gate. But so then Vrabel puts him back out there, and he catches it. I'm like, okay, he's got his confidence back. He caught the second punt. Then he puts him out there for the third one. I'm like, okay, he's trying to get him back going again. And then he lets it bounce, and it rolls 20 more yards in a game where we knew field position was going to be a huge game in the rain. And he lets it bounce 20 yards, and you can see him. You can see Vrabel talking to him on the sideline, like, all right. And then after that, it was Adam Humphreys.
We call those hidden yards.
So that's two mistakes by Adoree and special teams, which, you know, you can't have those mistakes if you're going to go on the road and win in a short week.
All right, Titans fans, let's get your phone call, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Also, Predators in Tampa Bay tonight, home and home with the Lightning, 6 o'clock tonight, 7 o'clock tomorrow. We've got the Vols and the Gators to get to. A lot to do on the show today. But a ton of Titans after last night's loss to the Jaguars. We will come back and take your calls, 737-1025. And I'm going to make an official statement about the quarterback. I reached a boiling point last night. Morning Drive live this morning from Kitchen Notes. We're back after this on ESPN 102.5 A Game. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What is Constable producing back there?
We're live this morning from Kitchen Notes. Omni Nashville Hotel.
What's going on?
That was some angry music, Marquise.
Fired up.
This is for Nick. This is a reason why this song is playing. All right.
Boys, I'm officially done.
All right.
I am done.
Tell us why you're done, boss. Tell us why you're done, son.
And you know I'm not an overreactionary guy. I'm not a hot take guy. I do the opposite of what the guy does from 2 to 6.
Tell us why you're done, son.
But you're going to.
But here's the deal. You're never going from good to great with number 8. It is officially.
Say that again.
You are never going from good to great with number 8.
That's just
a fact. And look, Marcus Mariota is like a cruise ship. He's a big vessel out at sea. He's taking on water. I'm getting off the ship. If Braden, if
so
you want
a bathtub,
if you want to stay
the,
on the boat,
the drain has been.
By all means, you stay. When you decide to get off, I'll toss you a life vest. There will be a little boat for you to get in, and we will swim to shore. But I'm done with Marcus Mariota, and I know he took a beating last night. And it's not just about last night. But if they lose next week to the Atlanta Falcons and they fall to 1-3, and if Marcus looks pedestrian, I'm doing one of two things. I'm either starting Tannehill against Buffalo, or I give a short hook to Marcus in that Buffalo game. Because I already know now what Marcus is, and I know what Ryan Tannehill was in Miami. And he was less than what Marcus is in Tennessee.
That's
but
concerning.
I need visual confirmation of what Tannehill is here so I know what I can do later in the year and start making my plans. I'm officially virtually done with Marcus Mariota. I've seen enough.
There's a really complicated discussion, and I had this discussion on Twitter last night with a lot of fans because they feel a lot – obviously a lot of fans feel the same way you do. And there's a couple different conversations. There's one about today. What do we do about the team this week? How do you win games today, tomorrow, you know, against Buffalo, against Atlanta? Is Ryan Tannehill going to give them a better chance? That's a conversation we can have. I don't – and, Derek, you answered that question last night. There was no real point to putting Tannehill in last night. There's also a question about what do you do long-term with the quarterback position. And those are two very different conversations because, again, as we – I think we had Andrew Brandt on a couple of – last week, and he said – there are no more in-between contracts. You're either bad at the position and you don't have a quarterback on your contract, or you're paying a lot of money for one. And there is a very real risk versus reward conversation to moving on from Marcus Mariota and putting yourself into a risky situation of not having anyone capable of playing quarterback. Now, I will say this, and this will be my one positive note, because I think he missed – you said it last night too, Derek. He missed at least four or five open receivers in the first half. Like, easy throws. Like, the Adam Humphries bubble screen – is an easy throw that you have to make. You can make all the tough throws you want, which he did last night. He made a bunch of tough throws, but he also missed a bunch of easy ones. You can't miss the easy throws, and you've got to be more consistent on the short passing game. He misses Jonnu Smith on a crossing route. He misses Adam Humphries on a bubble screen. That being said, he wasn't the problem in the second half. The first three drives of the second half, a close football game still. I think it was 14-0. The first three drives of the second half, he was 10 of 14 for 154 yards and got his team into the red zone. They went for it on 4th and 6. It should have been at that point, it should have been 7-7, basically, or 7-3, because the Adoree Jackson play shouldn't have happened, right? So he was a huge problem in the first half. He was not a problem at all in the second half. I'm not counting the garbage yards. I don't care about that crap. Don't give me 300 yards passing today. It was a good day for him. That's not true. The last 80 yards, at least, were garbage yards. I'm not going to count those. But he was good in the third quarter. He was very good in the third quarter, and he tried to get him back in the game, and then Mike Vrabel does the most unthinkable thing I can ever imagine, which is go for it on 4th and 6 when you've got a chance to cut the lead to 11 in a very low-scoring game where your defense is playing great. I just don't understand the decision from Vrabel in that one.
So all I can do is laugh. You're right. It wasn't all Marcus's fault. I know that. But you know what? If he's my quarterback, he can't be the reason why I'm losing. And he was one of the reasons why they were losing. And he's been one of the reasons why they have been losing. He hasn't played well. People, he hadn't played well all season. I think this whole, you know, people look at the Cleveland game. That was all a facade. It's fugazi. It's just you know, it's just stuff out in the wind, man. It's just, I'm going to show you this, but it's really this over here. It's the puppet behind the screen. All that stuff in Cleveland, that wasn't real. That game, Cleveland basically said, here, you can have it because we're undisciplined. Here, you can have the game. Indianapolis walked into that stadium and said, you know what? We ain't going to give y'all the game like Cleveland did. We're going to take it from y'all. And then Jacksonville came in and said, you know what? We tired of y'all beating us up. We the new dogs on the block. We're gonna beat y'all up. And that's basically what they did. They beat them up for four quarters. It was smothering.
Calais Campbell, holy smokes.
They were smothering. And I look at Marcus Mariota. Mariota, Mario, whatever you want to call him. Maybe he should change his name to Mariota, okay? Maybe it'd be a little bit better. But Marcus, I got this question asked of me yesterday when I was doing a hit for a San Diego station yesterday. They said, is Marcus Mariota? They said Mariota, then he corrected, said Mariota. Is he the franchise guy? Is he their all-star bona fide quarterback? And I said, no, he's not. He's not even close to that. He's a okay quarterback on a team that has no other options. Basically, that's what he is. This guy has shown me repeatedly. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Whatever Marcus is trying to do over the offseason the last couple of years, it ain't work. Because I want to throw more on platform. I want to use my legs more. Marcus, well, if you look back at every game this season, you throw with your upper body. You don't use your legs. You don't involve your lower body in nothing that you do other than running.
Unless he's on the roll.
Rolling out.
And that's when he happens to be accurate.
Why did he miss Jonnu Smith the first pass of the game crossing around? Because he didn't step into the throw.
Yep.
He does these things that people think he's going to change. He's not. He is Delaney. He is who we thought he was.
He gives you everything as far as the misses go. He sails them high. He throws them low. He throws behind. He doesn't put enough zip. They're wobblers. They're ducks. The whole vernacular of bad throws he has in his arsenal in one quarter.
They know. I'm going to tell you something. Those guys, those pass catchers, especially Delaney Walker, he know he's not the guy. They know he's not the guy. They are frustrated, completely frustrated with him. But they can't say anything. And I don't expect him to say anything.
Because he's professional.
Exactly.
He's professional. A battler.
And
he's a warrior.
And he takes every single blame.
He takes all the bullets.
He will not say a single word about the offensive line allowing 9 sacks last
night. But he is a part of the problem. And if you are my franchise quarterback, you can't be a big part of the problem, which you are. It is just amazing to watch him after 5 years, and he's doing some of the same things he was doing in year 1 and 2. That tells me from from experience, he's not the quarterback. You're going to make the same mistake that the Baltimore Ravens made with Kyle Bowler. They kept him a little bit too long because they thought Kyle was the guy, but Kyle started off kind of rough. Because he started off and he just got thrown in the fire. Kind of like Marcus. He got thrown in the fire.
On a really bad team.
And he didn't have people around him to help him out, but one guy, Ty Heap, and the running back. Well, Marcus was sort of kind of the same with Delaney Walker. But I've seen this picture before. He's not going to get any better. And eventually, you're going to have to make the change.
This is where the stat guy that's been complaining about Marcus for however many years now, 2.5 years, you know, one of the things I always say is, give me the win over the stats any day of the week. Last night, for example, got your perfect stats. Over 50% passer, 300 yards. His numbers right now are better than he's had in 3 years. But it doesn't mean anything if we're watching him miss open receivers and the team is losing. Again, this is the opposite of, I want yards and touchdowns. I want yards and touchdowns. Well, now you're getting them. You've gotten yards and touchdowns, no interceptions. He's on pace for 3,800 yards and 30 touchdowns, whatever you want to call it, and it doesn't matter because he's not playing good enough football and the team's not winning. So, again, this is where stat guy who's been yelling for 8 months about the stats, you got to shut up and turn around and say, wait a second, it is more about how you play and how the team looks and the decisions you make and all that stuff. But, again, if we're going to talk about 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 terrible throws, you also have to talk about dropping a dime to Adam Humphries and how you threw the ball in the third quarter. You got to be fair and call out the good throws when they're good. Because
the bomb to Tajay was beautiful.
The throw to Tajay was great.
Perfect.
There was a couple of great – the Jonnu Smith seam route in the third quarter was a phenomenal throw. You look at this and you go – this is what makes Marcus so frustrating, is you see these flashes. You're like, oh, my God, there it is. There it is right there. And then you – on a really tough throw down the field to Adam Humphries, who's being covered by a Jalen Ramsey, and you're going, man, that's a great throw. And then you look at him and he goes – Adam Humphries is standing 8 feet away, wide open, and you can't throw him the football. And you're going, why can't you make the easy throw, too? If you're occasionally going to give us the big play, great. Why can't you make the easy throw to Jonnu Smith on the first play of the game? Or to Delaney Walker last week on the first play of the game? Or I think Tajay again was open on a play where he underthrew him and it hit the ground 5 or 6 yards short of him. The one where Tajay's down the seam in the third quarter. And he's open, and Marcus and Tajay aren't on the same page. The ball goes outside, Tajay goes inside. Somebody's wrong. Probably Marcus, probably Tajay, probably both at this point. So it's this flash of brilliance followed by a complete whiff that makes you so frustrated as a fan.
All right, I'm going in the T-shirt business. The first slogan on the shirt is, you ain't going from good to great with number 8. What do you want, a medium? You want a large?
I need a medium.
You like them tiny.
I need a medium.
Yeah, you like
tiny.
Now, the other one I'm going to trademark, since I'm done with Marcus, how about this one for a T-shirt? From Marcus to Jake, what will it take?
See, this is
not from, but
yeah, no,
from.
We got you. We got you.
From Marcus to Jake, what will it take?
Put your khakis on and go somewhere else.
There is the man between the hedges, folks.
I love Jake Fromm. This is a bigger discussion we need to have because Josh Ward's coming up next. But like the bigger discussion is, all right, let's say we're moving on from Marcus. What's the plan? Because there is no good plan. That's the problem.
Start Tannehill and deal with the rest of the season.
But then you're wasting young talent to go 8-8 or 7-9.
What young talent?
You got a lot of young talent on defense, man.
Listen, you wasting the young talent with Marcus.
They've been in the playoff race the last couple of years, man. I don't know.
This team, Marcus, is not good. Let's just face the facts. He's okay. That's just what he is.
I've never said anything other than okay.
He's an okay quarterback. Like they used to say on the Little Rascals, Buckwheat. Not Buckwheat, but yeah, it was Buckwheat. Alfalfa Buckwheat, one of them.
I think it was Buckwheat.
Ote. He's Ote.
The Aloha Ote.
That's what he is, basically.
Get ready, boys. We're going to be seeing Tamarhan, I think, pretty soon.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse, boys.
And then they might go back to Marcus
after
that. Yes,
they're going to have to because Tannehill's not the answer.
All right, Josh Ward is the answer. He's got the answers for the Vols and the Gators. We'll take a little debriefing from the Titans for a couple of minutes, and we'll talk about the other football team in this state. They travel to the Swamp. Hopefully a better outcome as they go to the state of Florida tomorrow. We're back after this live from Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. A lot of Titans talk today, but we will take two detours this morning. A little bit of Preds coming up later on in the show, and a little college football as well. And we start with our buddy Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. Josh, happy Friday. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing great. Good to be with you guys.
So let's get into this Florida-Tennessee matchup. Obviously, the Gators a home favorite by about 2 touchdowns. We know last year there was 6 turnovers, and it was a debacle right out of the gate. How did the Vols get themselves into this game Saturday afternoon and just kind of navigate the waters so that it doesn't get away from them too quickly?
Yeah, they need to do the opposite of what happened at the beginning of last year, that as you're talking about there. In that game, Tennessee played its way out very quickly, and it was too much to overcome. And in this game, now on the road, being a big underdog, Tennessee has to eliminate those kinds of mistakes. Tennessee has to play as best it can mistake-free football, and it's not going to be 100% there. But Tennessee needs to, on the defensive side, be the one that creates a lot of pressure and does its best to take the ball away from Kyle Trask and Emory Jones if he's in there at quarterback. It needs to be a flip script from a year ago, because you're not playing straight up here. You're playing from behind, essentially, going in. And Tennessee has to do a bunch of things. And then quarterback play is going to be a big factor in this game. How does Garantano play? What does it look like with Trask and Emory Jones? We'll see on Saturday. But with what we've seen the first couple of weeks from Tennessee's quarterback, everybody, including Garantano and Jeremy Pruitt, agree he has to be better. But he is the guy, and they don't have another option right now to count on in the offense. That's why Garantano and helping the offensive line with them protecting, that's going to be big for Jared as well.
You know, you look at this matchup, Josh, and you try to find an area where Tennessee can take advantage, and certainly they've been better at running the football the last 2 weeks. Daniel Batuli back healthy. Are either of those two areas, are you more positive about Tennessee's ability to run the football? I know they're facing a good defense. Are you more positive about Tennessee's defensive front because maybe Florida's offensive line concerns? Is there any hope along the line of scrimmage for either side of the ball to find some success on Saturday morning?
I would say if I had increased optimism, it would probably be on the defensive side with Daniel Batuli out there. That's not an excuse for losing to Georgia State. That's an inexcusable loss and always will be. But he would have helped, I'm sure, if he had been able to play in that game and getting guys lined up and having an understanding. Because that is as impressive as Henry To'oto'o is, that's not a strength of his, I'd say, in helping his teammates before the ball is snapped. Henry can play. He's one of Tennessee's better defenders. But Batuli can help his teammates play at a higher level. Now, does that clean everything up? Does that give Tennessee some huge advantage up front. I would not say that at all, but it gives them a better chance of avoiding those big mistakes that I'm talking about and giving Florida open lanes to run through. If I'm Florida, I'm still trying to line up and run the ball as much of it as that's been a challenge in the first 3 weeks. I would still try to do that and test Tennessee's defense to see if it can be better there and see if I'm right that Daniel Betuli helps. On the offensive side for Tennessee trying to run the ball, I really like Ty Chandler and Eric Gray, and Tim Jordan being back really does help them in terms of the numbers they have in the backfield. But when Tennessee was able to run so successfully against BYU, it got out on the perimeter, and it did that over and over again. And against Florida's defense with that speed, I question whether Tennessee is going to be able to do that consistently. I try, and I would do everything I can to try to get the ball to Chandler and Gray in creative ways. It's obviously going to be harder against Florida's defense than BYU, but Tennessee's going to have to try it. It's going to have to try to get the ground game going. And I will say Tennessee's offensive line that it used against Chattanooga, it's a bigger group. They've got a lot of size up front. I think they'll be a more physical group than we saw in the first week, but are they going to be good enough? That's still a big test, easily the biggest test they will have faced.
Now, this UT team has played. They've gotten a little bit better after the Georgia State game. They played better against BYU, albeit a loss, but they win that game if they don't make a blunder at the end. They play better against Chattanooga. We expected that. This game with Florida ushering in a new quarterback, and I know Trask played really good when he came in against Kentucky. Is this as simple as not necessarily what, you know, player against player? Is this just as simple as, hey, listen, what can Jeremy Pruitt, what can they scheme up against Dan Mullen in this Florida defense and offense?
That's probably where I start the conversation if I'm going to talk about Tennessee having a chance to pull off the upset. If Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Ansley can come up with ways to get after Florida's quarterbacks and to take the ball away, I think that has to happen for Tennessee to have a realistic chance to pull off the win. Can Daryl Taylor, Sean Schamberger, who is Tennessee's nickel that they'll send to the backfield, Kovaris Crouch is a player I think to pay attention to. He's a true freshman who's played more and more over the last 3 weeks. They really like his pass rush ability. He's still learning the position. He was a five-star high school running back, linebacker, and in the spring he was at Tennessee, but he's playing inside linebacker. They put him at outside linebacker and said, let's see if you can go get the quarterback, and he's essentially playing outside linebacker or defensive end. So in third down situations, can Tennessee keep Florida from being able to run effectively? I think that's priority number one, because if that's the case, then Tennessee might believe that it can go after the quarterback and create some havoc in the backfield, and then again, you try to take the ball away. Jeremy Pruitt talks about it so much, but it really is important. If Tennessee can't win turnover battles in these kinds of games, then it's unrealistic to think it's going to win. That's how Tennessee gave itself a chance to beat Auburn a year ago. I think that's what Tennessee's going to have to do this week as well.
Josh, what's the status for Bryce Thompson?
Well, he's going with the team. He'll be there in Gainesville, and I can't believe that he would go with the team and then not play. So I don't know if he's going to start, but he's been practicing since last Wednesday with Tennessee's football team. And Jeremy Pruitt has talked about him having to earn his way back on the field, and talked about how he was away for a few weeks, but he wasn't away with an injury. He was with Tennessee for most of August. So he's ready to play football for Tennessee. And if Tennessee's taking him, I, again, can't imagine that he wouldn't go out there. So I don't know how much he's going to play, but he practiced a good bit. When the media was able to see some of the individual defensive back drills this past week, he was working with the ones, at least the way that they lined up. So it would be really surprising in this game with Tennessee taking Bryce Thompson for him to not play. He has a court date coming up this week. So I think part of the thought is, well, by the time he's playing at Neyland Stadium the next time, which is in 2 weeks, he will have had his legal situation resolved, kind of making an assumption there.
All right, Vols cover, Vols win, Gators roll. What do you got?
I do have Florida winning. I have the Vols covering. I had to make a pick at the beginning of the week, and I don't want to go back and forth on that one. So I've got the Vols covering, but they're going to have to do a lot of the things I talked about just to cover the game, and then to pull off the upset, it gets even more difficult. So I'll take Florida in the swamp getting the win. Tennessee keeping it a little more competitive maybe than people expect.
Josh, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the game. We'll chat with you next week.
Hey, you got it. Thanks, guys.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. I feel really good now. Like Braden Gall just asked if if the Vols are going to cover in an interview.
It's your influence, Nick.
I'm a bad influence.
No, listen, I've always loved watching point spreads. We're just now allowed to talk about it a lot more freely because...
Not taboo?
Yeah, I never really thought it was taboo to begin with, but... yeah,
points, I like taboo the game.
Following point spreads has always been an interesting part of college football in particular because the NFL's lines are generally pretty, you know, they're within one, they're within a very small window. College point spreads are always way swinging way left and right, and you know, I'm with Derek on this. I think the Vols play well in cover, but I don't think they're going to win. So.
All right, let's get to a little bit more college football in the SEC. It's a big week in the conference. We'll hit on all the games that matter when we come back. And speaking of college football and picks, make your picks now for the three college football underdog teams that you think will win this Saturday outright. This weekly winner will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville sporting event or concert. Hit up thegamenashville.com or the ESPN Game Nashville mobile app and play today. Silly Underdog Picks is sponsored by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket. A little college football chatter, and then we're back to the Titans at the top of the hour. Stay there. It's Morning Drive live from Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, 6:47 here on a Friday. We're live this morning, Kitchen Notes, inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise. We will get back to last night's Thursday night debacle coming up in just about 13 minutes. But coming off the Josh Ward interview, some stuff with the Vols and Gators, as well as the slates for Saturday in the SEC. Of all the games between Florida and Tennessee, LSU, Vandy, A&M, Auburn, Georgia, Notre Dame, and the other ones I omitted, what game, what matchup, is there one thing specifically you're looking forward to seeing tomorrow?
I mean, Georgia, Notre Dame, just from like an aesthetic standpoint, Notre Dame's never played between the hedges, so if you love college football, just the setting is going to be really just sort of picturesque and idyllic. It's just sort of what college football's all about. I hope the game matches that. I don't think so. I think Georgia's offensive line's going to win, and I think Georgia pulls away and wins fairly easily. The one that really has me intriguing from an outcome standpoint is A&M and Auburn, because the loser is basically done. This is the playoff right here. For Gus Malzahn, who's dealing with some stuff from his fan base, Jimbo Fisher's already lost to Clemson. They both have to, by the way, have to play LSU and Alabama, and A&M has to play Georgia too. Just think about those schedules. Yep. The loser is done. The loser has no chance to win the SEC West, probably. So this is a playoff game for both teams already in week four, and I love that amount of gravity in a game. That's what makes the road team has won 6 out of 7 between these two, so the road team's been very good. Auburn's, this is Bo Nix's first start ever in a true road environment. I just think the Auburn A&M game, like, the stakes are so high because the loser is done, and the winner is probably thinking, hey, maybe we got a shot at this SEC West thing. So the gravity of that game, to me, is what makes that so intriguing, and it's why CBS picked it as its 2:30 game. So
yeah, I think that game will really show whether Fisher is making, you know, headway with that program, because this is a program that we looked at last year and we thought, okay, they're on uptick, they're doing some things. You know, he gets another year with Kellen Mond. That team is going to take off. But then you watch him this year, and Kellen Mond is not the same quarterback he was last year. They're not playing as good as they did last year. And if they lose against Auburn, you're right, because you look at the schedule moving forward. If they lose against Auburn, they're done. Yeah. Now they can play spoiler to other, exactly. Yeah, you know, exactly. But I think they're completely done.
They still have to play Alabama, Georgia, yeah, and LSU.
But if if Auburn wins in the fashion they won the Oregon game, this kid started to get some juice. If they beat A&M
on the road,
man, oh man, they're going to start. Auburn will start picking up steam.
I think you're right.
And they're going to be a tough team to play.
One thing
forward.
To do it though, neutral field against Oregon in Cowboys Stadium.
Exactly.
Kyle Field, that place gets loud. Bo Nix is completing, I think, 51% of his passes this year. They're going to find a way to get him confident early on.
It's very, like, don't get me wrong, the stage, a big stage to make your first ever start as a freshman. It's a huge moment. All eyes are on you around the country, but it's not a true road environment. It's definitely a little bit tougher to do that. And I think you're right. Like, Auburn always does this to us. When they're not picked to do anything, they slowly build momentum, and all of a sudden we look up and they're like number 6 in the nation, you know, with like 3 weeks to go, and they've beaten everybody they've played. This is a game, but you're also right, Derek, about Jimbo Fisher. This is a game, if you're A&M, you should win. Mm-hmm. You have the veteran quarterback. They have the freshman quarterback. Now, Auburn's defense is spectacular. Their defense is awesome, and it's going to show up. But year two of your program, you are at home, you have the veteran quarterback. Those things should – that's why you're favored by, what, 4 points, I think?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you are favored. And you should win this game if you're A&M and you want to see your program take the next step. This is the other side of that equation is this is one of those – if this is going to be a magical season with a freshman quarterback for Auburn, this is where he makes some crazy play like he did against Oregon, and all of a sudden the legend of Bo Nix continues to grow. And, LSU Vandy, I don't see a whole lot of optimism there for Vandy. We've talked about Tennessee, Florida.
Two games that I think are interesting, though, is Kentucky, Mississippi State, mm-hmm. as well as South Carolina, Missouri. Everybody thought, Ryan Helinski played really well last week, and he did. I thought he had a good game. Missouri's a 10-point favorite.
This is a game for Missouri to show, because they've played really, really good football since losing to Wyoming in week one.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably more likely the team since then than the team that played that night. On the road, again, if you are in the administration for Missouri and you are in a position of power, why did you play that football game? I do not understand. So, Missouri, I think you're right. If they win, and they win easily against South Carolina at home, it sets them up to be a contender in the East because they still are playing pretty good football. Mississippi State and Kentucky, think about where the loser is going to be on that. Joe Moorhead, year two, you're going to be 2-2 if you lose that game. Mark Stoops, backup quarterback, you lose that game, you're 2-2. You're already trending. Both teams, the loser of that game will struggle to get to a bowl game. And so, this is the beauty of college football. You're week four, and we're already talking about season-long ramifications for a lot of these teams. Notre Dame, if you lose this game against Georgia and it's convincing, you might be done. That could eliminate you from the playoff. It's not a bad loss to lose to Georgia on the road, but it's how you look doing it. And, Georgia got eliminated last year from the playoff because they lost to LSU on the road, and it wasn't pretty. Not because of the Alabama game, but because they lost so badly to LSU. So I think a bad loss early in the year can really knock you out of the playoff. And even though it's a good team in Georgia, I think Notre Dame has to prove itself if it wants to belong in the national championship conversation, which I'm not sure it does. If it needs to play at least really well. I think Georgia's volcano of an offensive line is just going to they're going to run all over Notre Dame, in my opinion. I think Jake Fromm and that offense is too good.
Programming reminder tonight at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Predators preseason continues with game number 3 of the exhibition slate. They are in Tampa Bay to skate with the Lightning. Puck drop at 6 o'clock tonight. And then they fly back here for a 7 o'clock puck drop home and home tomorrow here in Smashville against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll get to the Preds a little bit later in the show. We'll come back. We're going to get back into the Tennessee Titans and last night's disaster against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we'll open up the phones as well. We want to hear from Titans fans. What do you make of this team, the offensive line, the quarterback, Adoree, the head coach, many different talking points with this team? Your calls when we come back, 737-1025, the number 615-737-1025. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, we're live from Kitchen Notes. Back after this on ESPN 102.5 The Game.